Hi guys, Henrik here. Thank you for tuning in. Good to be back again. Feels like it was a while ago since we did a show now, doesn't it? A lot of things have happened in the last month. Obviously too numerous to go over here to or try to accurately break down to you in a quick way right now. So I just wanted to say that if you have not gotten up to speed on everything that's happened yet, maybe you, listen to the radio show or get the podcast or something like that, and maybe you're not going to our YouTube channel or even to redice.tv, our public site, please go to our members' website, redicemembers.com. There's three videos there right now. Well, perhaps not if you're listening to this in the future in the archives, but as of right now, September 22nd, there are only three videos up on that page where I explain everything about the attempts at destroying everything that I've built over the last decade. This is not only, of course, a cowardly activity and a dishonorable act, it's a criminal activity. And when these people will be found out, they will go to jail and do time for their crimes. So those who have claimed responsibility for this have frankly most likely gotten help from forces higher up the food chain, or possibly someone on the inside that we believe that we can or that we have trusted at some point. It's very difficult to figure out as of right now. Anyway, the whole story is on redicemembers.com right now. Three videos for you there explaining everything. And I just want to mention as well that, you know, we appreciate all of you that have really kind of remained in the fight during this time and sustained your membership with us. We are looking at having our brand new, much cooler, awesome members website up in about 2 weeks' time or so. So do please, you know, continue, sustain your membership. We can't thank you enough for doing that. We're going to do some, you know, special stuff for you guys once we get going in an attempt at showing our appreciation for the fact that you've stayed with us. So again, I just want to say thank you for your patience. Thank you for, you know, to all our members who have been staying with us. And I apologize to anyone who believed that things were going to happen to them because they had been a member on our website and that somehow was or could be used against them. Quickly, as I explained in some of my first two videos on that subject, we have a wide range of very diverse topics on our website available. 10 years of material, down-to-earth stuff, off-the-wall stuff, cool stuff, some kooky stuff, a lot of esoteric and conspiratorial material too. So this has been a journey of discovery for us, you know, for me. It's been a journey of exploration into what matters to me, what has been interesting, and what I've simply just been curious to find out more about, all kinds of stuff. The recent years now, we've explored the agenda of the globalists, and we have put ourselves in a position of being in opposition to them in an effort to preserve the diversity of this planet. And yes, that includes European peoples and their nations too. And they have a right to exist just as everyone else does. We've explained this, but this is just the most fundamental, you know, principle of the matter. I discovered things or found out things about what was happening in Sweden that woke me up to this question, and where I previously had been very much kind of, you know, into new agey topics and this kind of stuff, I just, you know, was set on a different direction when I realized this and got in touch with my own background and heritage. So it's been an awakening process. That's the most fundamental way I can explain it. So anyway, no one, my point being here, no one could ever approach you because you've been a member of Red Ice and charge you with guilt by association, or somehow that, you know, they could approach you and know the motives of why you signed up as a member to our website, or what topics that you wanted to listen to or watch, you know, on our website. So this claim that our enemies did towards us, that somehow this was a dox or something, or that this was kind of going to lead to bad things for you as a member, that was just an attempt, a scare tactic to ruin us financially so that we would not be able to continue producing material in a way that we've been doing, that these people have been so terribly afraid of, that they go to these lengths of, you know, doing criminal activity to try to stop what we're doing, right? So unfortunately, some of you guys kind of, you know, bought into that lie and signed off. And frankly, before you could hear my side of the story, I don't blame you without knowing that information. But obviously, we need you guys to come back. We want you guys back as supporters, as members, you know, to our website. So when we do have the new members website up and running in about 2 weeks or so, please come back, sign up again, make sure that we can continue to be the threat that the enemies consider us to be, right? So thank you, boys and girls. We appreciate everything that you have done for us over the years so that we've been able to do what we do. And of course, in return, we try to produce you know, both for our members, but also for the public, you know, for our YouTube channel for free, some of the best media that we can to help get the word out about the criminal globalists and what they are attempting to do to us and to our people and the future that they are attempting to engineer, you know, according to their own vision. So anyway, let's go over to our guest, Hagen Grell. We're going to talk today about the upcoming election in Germany and some of the recent developments in one of these countries that the globalists have really set their sights on and have pushed far, far, far down the road to ruin. Stay with us. Good show ahead. Well, Hagen Grell, it's good to have you back on the show. Thank you for coming on once again. We did a video interview, what was that, a couple of months ago, I think. It's good to have you back again.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks for having me again. It's been a great and a crazy time, too.
Indeed. We have, of course, Hagen, an election coming up here in Germany just this Sunday, I believe it is, right? The weekend here?
Yes, it's on Sunday.
Very good. So give us the background or some of the breakdowns of what's happening so far with the election. If there's any patriotic party in Germany that's, you know, doing well, AfD, of course, is one of the parties people are keeping an eye on, etc. But how's the election campaigns been this time?
It's been crazy because there's so much. You mentioned the AfD, and basically this election is about the AfD, or basically this election is about two extremes. One extreme is basically electing the system, the regime parties, which means abolishing Germany, abolishing German identity, and basically replacing Germany. I say that so openly because that's how our politicians are talking about it. And the AfD basically is the only party which is saying like closing the borders, sending people back. Of course, there's some this part of the AfD. Some are more extreme, but it's the only party where this is talked about. And the other parties basically are joining. They're like firing a little bit into each other's directions, but not much really. And all are like fighting the AfD as if they were the devil.
Yeah, and I mean, are they really that? They're not really that hardcore, are they, in terms of, I mean, it's good, of course, that they want to close the borders and you know, politics concerned. We need mainstream, somewhat of a mainstream line party that just bring sensible points kind of to the table. But they aren't really that extreme, are they?
They aren't extreme in the slightest. They are basically the CDU 20 years ago, so to speak. But it has been, or we have seen such a shift to the left that everything and to the extreme that every party basically is like welcoming diversity, which is actually the replacement of the German citizens. They're talking openly about it. We need more people from abroad, and because Germans are not reproducing, but we don't want to further Germans reproducing because this would be Nazi and stuff. And so people are actually saying that with the AfD, there might be Nazis coming back to the parliament, when in actuality, they're the only party that didn't have any former Nazi members, for example, in their party. There has been a list lately, which was going around, which showed that people from the NSDAP went to other parties after that. It's old stuff, but right. Basically, if they're saying they're the Nazis, they're far from it. They're, as you said, pretty mainstream, but 20 years ago, and as the mainstream went so far left, they're seeming to be extreme, but they're really not.
Yeah, I think Millennial Woes put it in a good way. He was talking about this issue that what many people want, today, who are more on the right wing, if you will, or conservative, even whatever term you want to use for it, they basically want something that their grandparents took for as a given, basically, right? And yes. And but as you say, since the whole spectrum has shifted so much to the left, even very sensible conservative positions, they've managed to pose as these extreme right wing positions when they really aren't, right? And it's a brilliant move. We've got to hand it to them. They've shifted the spectrum so much that, you know, even most balanced, sensible positions they can write about in the papers and talk about it in the media as this fanatical right-wing extremism. Brilliant, isn't it?
Yes. And it's crazy. And it's just working because in Germany, there's so many things centralized in a, let's say, a socialist way, or I'd say crypto-socialist, but let's not go further into it. Just saying that the power is very, very concentrated. Just to give you an example, in Germany, there's no real separation of the powers as it seems to be. So the lawyers, the judges are not really separate from the executive branch because they're elected from the executive branch and not from the people, for example. So and the general attorney is not really standing for them, it's himself, but he is part of the executive branch. So there has been over 1,000, and this was by I think one of the largest news agencies was has been publishing that, and some newspapers picked it up. There have been since 2015, since the migration wave by Angela Merkel was initiated, there have been 1,000 cases made against Angela Merkel for treason and for other stuff, and all of them have been dismissed. And the general attorney, of course, said yes, it was all baseless and everything, and nothing was really. Yeah, we couldn't find anything. But if they're not really separate, then of course they'd say that because she is their boss. So this is one thing happening. Then the legislative is not really separate either because Angela Merkel has the ability, of course, to can vote herself on laws, but also there's a fraction force, so to speak. I can't really translate it, but it means that if you're in a special party, then you should vote for the party. And it's actually illegal, but people are doing it anyways because, as I said, no really a separate duty which could be corrected for that. So, and if you're not voting with your party, then you could be off the list the next time and be out of the parliament. And the fourth branch, so to speak, the press, is also in the pocket of the parties because, for example, the CDU has a media company which owns, or they own a smaller media companies too. They have like 10 or more. They own newspapers partly. The SPD this is the same. The left party has some, but not as many, and the FDP too. So the media basically is controlled too. So we have four powers all joined together, and that's why narrative you were talking about can be enforced because this is there's no really separate power.
So the parties that you mentioned there, the SPD, CDU, etc., are they currently in an alliance with Merkel at the top of this alliance?
Yes, there's currently there's the CDU. That's the strongest party. I think it was 30 or 40% the last time, let's say something about in that region. Then the SPD, the second strongest party, they form a coalition and they reign at the moment. Then you have the Green Party and the Left Party in the parliament. They can do, of course, nothing really because they are just the opposition. And yes, Merkel, CDU, and the SPD are the reigning parties.
So what do you think is going to happen with Merkel this election? Is she still in there? I've heard so many rumors that Germany on a wide basis are basically getting sick of her and they can't wait to throw her out. Is that the case?
Yes, you could say so, but it's really difficult to find out because, as I said, the media is controlled. Also, the state media plays a big role because Germans are like other countries, for example, Austria too, are forced to pay a monthly fee for the state broadcaster. And in Germany, this amounts to 8 billion euros every year. So they have a lot of power, and they can influence people, and they can, of course, do polls and fake them, maybe, or not. But it's really hard to say. But on the other hand, you can see when Merkel is on the streets, she always lately she always gets booed. She always gets she has been thrown getting thrown at with tomatoes, for example, or with one tomato, I should say. But she has been booed very much. And about the polls issue wise. You could talk about the family reunification program. So this means that 390,000 Syrian people have been granted the permission to pull their quote unquote families, which is not really checked because Syrians weren't really checked if they were Syrians. They were just accepted as Syrians in Germany if they said so. So basically, a family of two could become a family of five, or a family of five could become a family of 10. So maybe we are looking at 2 or 4 million people that are trying to get in the next year. And there was a poll about it, a public poll, and even as Merkel is claiming so many supporters and as the the state media is saying, oh, Merkel has so great rates of approval. She's at 69 or something like that. Still, 60%, about 60% said, no, we don't want that family reunification. And this was mainstream. So it might be that even more people do not want that. So Merkel is in a pretty tough spot, and still she's doubling down as if she had, like in poker, she's a royal flush, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, what you going to do, right? I mean, it seems that her greatest objective has been to try to destroy Germany culturally, the biological makeup of the country, all these things. These are issues that she's managed to achieve. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, just your general sense of things. Is she in the pocket of other interests in Germany, or is she personally driven to do what she has done? What do you think?
I think, but that's just my personal opinion because you can just speculate about it. But there's a book, for example, or many books, but one in particular that a guy wrote who was at a really large newspaper, but who left it afterwards and is now working as a consultant for the AfD. He is Günther Lachmann, and he wrote it with another guy, and he was looking at the former life of Angela Merkel. And she's claiming, yes, in the GER, I did nothing. I was against the system, and I did not really do something to support it, and I was against it, blah, blah, blah. But he found out that she actually was very much in the system, and she was supporting it, and she found it great. And there's this very, very many details, a very interesting book. And so my
Sorry, is
perspective,
this about a
yes.
kind of a communist background? That's what you're talking
Yes,
about? Yeah, yeah.
in the GDR, her
Right.
socialist communist background in the GDR.
Yeah.
Yes, she in the youth organization and stuff where she worked and got into high positions. So there might have been people supporting her from the beginning. And if you look at it, the method she's using in her cabinet, the method she's using to influence people, the way the campaign is driven. For example, like with content-less slogans. For example, oh, for a Germany that we want to live in, or for a Germany that is good for everybody. This is what the campaign is basically consisting of. And so this is what she think I think she took from the past. And her goals might be, I think, partly to actually, as you said, to ideologically driven, maybe to change the country, and maybe she actually hates white people, and maybe to please someone. But I think she, or if I look at her deeds, she seems to be driven toward a goal. So I don't think she's in somebody's pocket and she's like, blackmailed or something. I think this is her goal. And I say that she may have been or may have something against white people because there has been another person from the GER, which actually worked in the Stasi, so the secret agency, the secret police, which tried to suppress people, tried to suppress opinions and put people in jail. She is Annetta Kahane. She was called EM Victoria, so unofficial member or a worker there who got people into prison, who worked with the regime. And she actually founded now has founded. Oh yes, she's seen the light, of course, like every one of these guys has seen the light now and is of course a Democrat and whatnot. And she has founded the Amadeo Antonio Stiftung, Amadeo Antonio Foundation. She's founded that, and there she is with the Minister of Justice, Heiko Maas, and he is like she is his top aide in fighting hate speech. Yes, to get these facts out. And she is some person who was on an interview, I think in 2015, maybe it was earlier, and th there she said, one of the things that the government has done, or that was after the fall of the Berlin Wall, one thing that was wrong or that was not handled well is that there have been so many white people left in Eastern Germany. That's what she actually
Yeah.
said. So this is a person that works closely with Merkel, and if you look at Merkel's policies, then you might say she might have something against white people too. And the last thing to that is that I say Angela Merkel was quoted, and this was recently, I think 2016. A German is someone who lives in Germany.
There you
not
go.
more.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, she had another classic interview that people have used. We've used it a couple of times too on RT when she's talking about, you know, how Germans can't be Germans anymore and Swedes can't be Swedes. And we live in this, you know, multicultural society now, and that's just how it is. And, you know, it is interesting. I mean, her dad, Max Gahane, actually was a member of the Youth Communist League. You know, and this again, take that issue. She literally is a former Stasi, you know, member, if you will. I mean, it begs,
at least of the regime. Yes,
exactly.
Part of the regime.
It begs, you know, the question: do these people have an ulterior motive? And I believe yes. You know, they certainly do. So these are the kinds of people that are running Germany completely into the ground. You know, we've had an issue like in other Western European countries. In America too, where basically if you end up in a defensive position, so to speak, talking about these issues, basically saying that there are people that are talking about these things, they want to replace the native European population, even just you voicing these concerns have been considered to be somehow, I hear somewhat differing opinions, but some call that in itself like white supremacy, to just kind of go into a white, yes, a defensive position on the issue. Some people claim that it's a hate crime and apparently hatred of other groups and stuff like that. Is that the same narrative in Germany, that if you kind of speak about these things and what you've observed, you know, in reality, that they go after you for being somehow, you know, a hate, you know, criminal or something like that?
Yes, but with myself personally, I'm more on a meta level, I'd say. So I'm not getting attacked that often. But in normal terms, yes, that is the case. And I have to mention a video actually from an English channel, but which was very like putting it together with the way I haven't seen it before. It was a recent video from Black Pigeon Speaks. You probably know him, and he was talking about that the foundation myth of the West has become the Second World War. And in Germany, this is particularly important, because that way in Germany, there's actually things possible, and it has gotten worse actually. Like people running around saying, Germany die a horrible death. And the politicians still say, oh yeah, there's no problem there. There's no leftist extremists or something like that. And they say, Germany never, never, never again. They're saying stuff like that. And they're attacking people who say, for example, yeah, Germany should be a home for German people. So it's actually that deep. You can't even say that you're proud of your, you couldn't say that you're proud of your nation. You couldn't say that you want to live, or you love your country and stuff like that. They even attacked you about that. And yeah, actually, it's the same problem as in the US, which is now the Antifa. But we had an Antifa problem way before. It has been 30 years or more where they have been very, very aggressive. They're attacking AfD members. They're burning cars. They're attacking their homes, for example. And the whole system is openly supporting this violence.
Yeah, that's right. And they do it in some cases also by not recognizing its existence. I mean, we've seen that in America too, where basically authorities and politicians and things like that, people who make comments about, you know, the kind of violence that has really raged in the last couple of years, they look the other way and in some cases even defend these tactics, because they see, I mentioned this the other day, I mean, the logical kind of fallacy of this issue, where somehow they see that, you know, any kind of patriotic or nationalistic tendencies, that somehow is on par with, you know, the most extreme fascism or something like that you can imagine, right? So these people see it viable and a logical solution to fight back with violence, right? They see kind of this as a self-defense. But in that moment, they take the first step and become the very violent people that they think or accuse people like us of being, right? So on the yes, own level of that logic, we should be able to, and we need to, defend ourselves against these attacks and these first step atrocities that occur, that they go after people, you know, having dissenting political views, for thinking differently than them. And it's clear that the organizations like Antifa has really just become kind of a fist of the establishment to a certain extent, to try to kind of scare people into submission, to give up to fight politically and run away and being afraid, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And they're so interwoven in Germany in particular with the system. It's crazy. And I wouldn't even say that's a logical fallacy anymore, because it's a willful, not blindless, a willful lie. Willful lie, because you can see, for example, it's so obvious. For example, there was a case very recently with a young woman from the leftist party. She was on the list to get into the parliament. She was very far back on the list, but she still was on the list, and she was caught in a Facebook group which was called Deutsch mich nicht voll, so don't German me, so to speak. Very dismissive against Germans, mm-hmm. again. And she was asking for anti-German film recommendations, and then with a heart in it, so a heart emoji, and especially where many, many Germans die. And unfortunately for her, a guy caught her and posted the screen, the screencast or the screenshot of it, and she had to step down. But this is just one example where someone had to take the consequences, because on the other hand, the sons, and this is also a big news, the sons of as I mentioned, Heiko Maas, the minister for justice, was the son his son is in the Antifa too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the son of Ralf Stegner, which is a minister president of a country in Germany, is also in the Antifa. And there's so many ties with Antifa and the politicians. They're financed through NGOs, which is Vereine in Germany. They're financed through it. So they fight against the right. This is a slogan which has been active since the 90s or earlier, and they're pumping money into those leftist organizations, which are themselves hate organizations, which attack right-wing politicians who just voice their opinions, or just people voicing their opinions in general. They attack them, but as the politicians say, oh, okay, there's no leftist extremism, there's just right extremism. So they're financing this fight against the right with state money, with taxpayer money.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because they've turned themselves into kind of the monster that they claim that they oppose. I mean, then this is a classic, you know, kind of psychological phenomena, if you know what I mean, that you kind of become what you hate.
Please let me elaborate on that.
Sure.
Because I would say that they didn't even believe that there's the monster that they're claiming to fight. Because if you look back at the Frankfurt School, which has become famous in the last year, especially, but before for some people, the Frankfurt School of Thought in Germany, they were actually a leftist think tank, one of the founding think tanks, so to speak, of the modern left. And they were saying, okay, let's accuse the other side of what we're doing, basically. It's been more intellectual, the way they were framing it, but in actuality, they were saying that. So I think many of those people, at least the originators of those thoughts, didn't even think that they were fighting this monster, but they were saying, okay, let's accuse the other guys of it so we can claim to fight it with the same methods.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. I was just, when I'm talking about it, I'm talking about it, you know, in those official terms of what they, kind of how they see themselves and the role that they fulfill, that, you know, somehow they have this grandiose opinion of themselves that they're, you know, they're saving the world, and even this projection upon like the older conservative society that many of these leftists claim to fight, they saw that as kind of a restrictive society that was like, there was no freedom of speech, there were, you know, dissenting opinions which they held were, you know, wasn't allowed in the public discourse, etc. And all those main points that they claimed that they were fighting on to a certain extent, they have now begun to do themselves. Right.
No. But as I was saying, I think even they didn't believe it before. Let's take an example. For example, if you say, okay, I want to, this is really nefarious, so to speak, But in some cases, you can actually prove it. If you'd say, okay, I want to do, we two are in a community, and I don't want you to have as much influence as you have, for example, then I'd say, okay, how can I do it? Okay, if I attack him, then I seem like the bad guy. Okay, I accuse him of something, and then I rally up all of the people to attack him. And
Yeah,
this
that's
is
right.
what some of them actually were doing, because if you say like there's been secret lists, for example, sometimes emails come out or people are seeing if there's been a parliamentary inquisition about it, and then they see it that they were actually plotting things like that, and just to cover up saying, oh yeah, the other guys were doing something, so we were just doing it in defense. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting what they're involved in. But yeah,
Yes.
it's a big system that they've managed to create. You know, just from a kind of a philosophical perspective, though, it seems that the political systems, the kind of establishment that have had a tradition of silencing other, in some cases violently, and going after people and scaring them away, et cetera, that never historically have seemed to work, right? That there's always a dark flip side to that, if you will, which we seems to be able to use to our benefit to a certain extent, right? That somehow we can use this psychologically, that they are afraid of our opinions, that they're afraid of hearing what we have to say. There is power in the opinions that we have. There's reason and logic there. Otherwise, they would never go after them in the way that they're doing, right? So in a way, I see it as the, I mean, yes, they have a lot of power. Yes, they have a lot of control. But at the same time, it's kind of the last attempts and death throes of this system at trying to defend itself before the wrath of the normal, regular people out there turn on them for being the tyrants that they are.
Yes, I would actually very much agree, because I'd see it that way, to use an analogy. If you have the Oh yeah, let's use this term because it's been going around, the overtone window. And the overtone window is where you the acceptable thought in a society, so to speak. And you can pull it by influencing people through the mainstream media, for example. And this is the lens through which people are looking at things and asking themselves, okay, is this acceptable? Is this radical? Is this maybe something viable for policy, for example? And so now let's use this overtone window and say, okay, there's something like a natural common sense. For example, people are feeling and seeing, and it's so easy, basically, that there's a woman and a man gender, so a female and a male gender, and nothing more, for example. And they've just tried to erase that and pull that further and further away. And I think it's like let's say like a rubber band, for example. The further you pull it away from the truth, the more force is for the common sense, so to speak, to pull that back to the middle. So basically, with all their power and with all the power they have used, they've pulled it so far away that just if they make a tiny mistake, it can go back to the middle with such a force that that can be really detrimental to their cause.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. How is the there's a, we were talking a bit before we started the recording, kind of a little bit of what's happened around in some of the different townships, different areas in Germany. You were mentioning one story, for example, out of Leipzig, where the mayor, who's a liberal, had kind of make some, you know, comments, because basically German society is changing in many ways. And what's interesting is that these liberals, these lefties, whatever you want to call them, seem very happy to look the other way on issues that they historically have actually been fighting on. For example, such as, you know, women rights and things like that. Talk a bit about what has been happening in certain towns around in Germany.
Yes, about the women's rights, I want to use a quote from a German politician. Some of the front runners, one of the two front runners from the Green Party, she said in a recent speech, "Oh yeah, Germany has become so much diverse, so much more, and we're so happy about it. That's what we always wanted. But women's rights and gay rights are not as guaranteed anymore because it's going to be more religious." And she tried to sell it as a good thing. And we're seeing this crazy double standard, and some people actually are waking up, as you said, the Leipzig, for example, because in Leipzig has been a very peaceful city, and it has been, we have to say that little foreign influences. There have been little foreigners, so to speak, and a lot of like homogenous people. With the increase of refugees in Leipzig, we have seen such a crazy increase of violence, of crime. This is crazy. So you have to see the correlation there. And there has been the mayor was very, very pro. We will do it, like we will make it, like Merkel said, and it's all great, and we just have to open our hearts and arms and whatever, whatnot. He was saying that for such a long time, but now he's rowing back. He's actually saying, okay, foreigners and refugees are causing problems. They're often criminals or doing crimes. And recently, has been a brutal story of a jogger, a woman in her 50s. Very tragic story. She was jogging in Leipzig. She was jogging past a refugee or a simulant of not really a refugee, and he went after her. He pulled her to the ground. He actually kicked into her face several times, and then he raped her. And she had to be sent to the hospital to be saved after that. And it was really tragic, terrible story. And it was, of course, a guy who was 25 to 35, Southern type, which is what they say now. They want to talk about the refugees or the not really refugees, but you know what I'm talking about, the migrants. And after that, the police reacted and they said, okay, Leipzig, we're recommending that women are not jogging alone anymore. You have to imagine that is so crazy. They don't jog anymore alone. And maybe not after it's gotten dark. But it's totally nuts. It's
It's
totally nuts. People
curfew.
haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's curfew on women now. I mean, we have the same in Sweden, one of these towns where they recommended women not to go out after a certain hour. And even if they did, that they would kind of be in the company of someone else. But basically, we're going back to a time, maybe I'm not against it then, right? When women had to be chaperoned, to a certain degree. But it
No, but
shows.
I don't want a woman to be in such danger. So that's yes, it's crazy.
It is crazy. I mean, these are issues which they claim that they were fighting for, but they're so willing to look the other way because it seems that there's an agenda which trumps women's rights here in this regard, and that's the replacement agenda. So they're willing to look the other way, even the transformation of our societies, just so that they can achieve this utter flooding of our countries, of people from foreign lands. That's the main agenda. And if women are hurt in the process, if they are raped, if they can't go out at night, whatever, oh well, let's look the other way. So was there any outrage about this against the mayor saying this, or
This is very difficult to find out because, as I said, the mainstream media is very much controlled by the parties and the public broadcaster too. So it's really hard to find out. In this case, I haven't heard it, but it's a work in progress, so to speak, because as the AfD is growing, the AfD is picking up those stories, of course, and the AfD is growing in supporters every day. It's been crazy, right? That's what I'm talking was I was talking about before. So basically, you can't see public outrage because it's suppressed, but you can see an increase in support for the AfD.
So that's good. So do you have any hope if we could turn back to the election for a moment in terms of AfD, if they gain more influence and power, what could they reasonably achieve? Is there any chance that anyone should get their hopes up about this party?
Yes, I think so because. The AfD is prospected to have around 10%. The AfD is trying to reach over 15%, and I think that they will at least be able to get over 20%. So this might be a big deal, even if they just get 10%, because they might mix up the coalition possibilities for the reigning party, for the CDU. Or even and be in the parliament to disturb them and show the craziness that is happening there, and actually there's some or in the AfD there are some hopeful candidates. For example, there's people I've actually talked to top candidates. There's Peter Bystron from the AfD in Bavaria, who is actually a migrant or a refugee himself from the communist system in the 1980s. He was a refugee himself, and now he's working for the AfD. or Björn Höcke, who is a from for the I'd say for the right wing of the party, a very hopeful candidate. He's very he said he actually said, or should there be a limit for immigration? And he said, yes, there should be a limit of minus 200,000 every year. So
Jeez. Oh man.
yes, this was very funny.
Yeah.
But so I think the party at the moment, I'd say, because our system is structured the way that every party will in the end might be corrupted very soon. So I think at the moment the AfD is captured by the public or captured by the resistance, so to speak,
Yeah.
I'd say, because it's very democratic in a way, to the grassroots democratic in the moment. The other parties aren't in any way, shape, or form, and it has been it is very, very much the hope for many people, which are supporting it with all what they can give, and they will be holding their politicians responsible. So I think they're a hope for us.
Okay, well, that's good. Channeling some of that discontent, of course, is a good way of a good start to it. And obviously, we do have to fight back politically in whatever way we can. It's still at the end of the day, I wonder if the solutions are political and if these people are strong enough. But it's better to do something than nothing, and that's where we have to begin. And I mean, the AfD is fairly, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but they're fairly new, right, party-wise. So even them gaining the percentage that they probably will do is a good indication of where we might be. I don't know, next two, three election cycles down the road. We can argue, of course, is it too late at that point? Yada yada. But forget that for a moment. In terms of the advancements that they have made, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yes, and as you said, of course, I'm not putting all my hopes in the AfD. I'm telling people, because there's also a notion, I have to mention that there's also a notion in the alternative media who are saying, oh yeah, people do not vote because when you vote, you legitimize the system and stuff. And I'm saying, no, people, you can vote and you do not legitimize the system at the same time. This is crazy. It's just a possibility, and we have to work after it harder than ever before. The fight has just begun. And the AfD is just one part of our fight, our struggle to really restructure our system, because our system is rotten to the core. I'd really say that,
Yeah,
because
of
there's
course.
even no separation of powers. And cannot rely on a party. Oh yeah, the AfD is in the parliament. Yes, let's party and let's go back to how we were before. No, that's not working. We have to work even harder after that. But there's a great chance to use the AfD at the moment and maybe come up with something after that. It's just a
Of course.
tool at the moment.
That's just it. I mean, all of these organizations and kind of things that come along, and in some cases they rise very quickly and then they fall, but I see them as stepping stones ultimately. None of the opinions that we hold are changed at the end of the day. It's just that we're using different methods to achieve what we want to achieve, and how we see kind of a slowdown and a kind of a transformation of society as it is now, and we have to use whatever means we can. And I think you're right. I think that this issue that they're trying to kind of instill a kind of a level of defeatism into us is what's really dangerous, where we basically feel, well, there isn't
Yes.
a chance, there's nothing we can do, it doesn't matter now. It's like, no, hold on a moment. We're still the majority in our countries. There's still a lot of people of us in our lands, and if we can channel, if we basically can reach these people and explain to them our sensible and very reasonable position, I think that we can, get a lot of work done. I think we can achieve a lot of good things in that. I think that the problem seems to be one of communication, because we have a mass media which utterly lies about our positions. They're turning us into this kind of Frankenstein monster. They're trying to project things upon us, which is not true. They're desperately trying with this, guilt by association and claim what we think or all these things all the time. And partially that's working, because that's the only information that the masses get about us. So we're lucky that we have the communication, channels that we do. But that's actually another issue which we've seen in America, which is very frightening, because of course America has its First Amendment, a very proud tradition of free speech and kind of these kinds of things. But when it comes to the internet, there's been a clampdown in just the last month here, really, which has been on par with nothing I've seen before. So it looks, Hagen, and I don't know if this is true in Germany too, but it looks like they're really trying to go after those communication channels too, to really choke people's ability to reach out and to communicate our positions to people.
Yes, this is actually happening here too, I think with even more force, because the infamous Justice Minister I was talking about, Minister of Justice Heiko Maas, has introduced the NetzDG, which basically puts giant fines on social networks if they do not delete hate speech, which is
That's free speech. Yeah.
And it is crazy. But let me say on the other part, coming back to the AfD for one moment, the AfD, I think, has been founded to be a honeypot for disgruntled system critics, but it has been captured by the resistance, so to speak. And now the AfD is, I think, the greatest accomplishment of the AfD is just to be a possibility for people to see, oh, I'm not alone, and sensible people on the right, I'm not alone, and I can have this opinion, and yes, I will be attacked, but it is ridiculous, because as I can see, my idols, for example, or politicians are attacked the same way, and I can talk about those ideas freely. And so this is a great accomplishment. And as you said about the internet, I think they're of course trying to censor those channels, but I think if something is out of the bag and you can't put it back in, so to speak,
the cat's out of the bag. Yeah.
Yes. And people are so used to follow their favorite channels and to see it being fed by the algorithms what they want to see. And if the algorithm doesn't show that, I don't watch beauty channels because the algorithm shows me that. I want to see what I have been seeing. It was great before, and I want to have it back. And this is what other people want to have too. So I don't think that they will be able to do that, and especially with Google's jigsaw algorithm to show you the other side. In Germany, I have seen the other side, and the other side is ridiculous. I will be laughing about it, but I will not be entertained, and I won't be quiet. And when I see my viewers, for example, on my German channel, they won't have it themselves.
Yeah, what was the jigsaw again? I remember that story. It was about a year or more ago. Tell us more about that. Remind us about what that was.
Yeah, jigsaw algorithm, it basically means if you're, okay, the positive example they want to set, which isn't even that positive, I'd say, is when you search for ISIS propaganda, then the algorithm will see that, and they will show you the other part of the story. So they'd say it's a anti ISIS propaganda,
right? And so they use,
you're not getting
that,
what you want,
right? And they use that issue of, like, you know, terrorism and ISIS and stuff like that, which is, like, you know, probably many people then can, like, agree with that, right? But the algorithm extended itself to what they deem to be, you know, hateful propaganda and things like this. That's what's dangerous with these kinds of systems, and when they put these kinds of things in place, because it will begin to cut away at every end of the political spectrum until you have a very narrow corridor left. And of course, this is the main crux of why free speech advocates are so why they voice their concern over, if you begin the censorship process, if you begin to filter things or cut things away, then basically where do you draw the line, right? It's the slippery slope that at the end of the day, they feel that it's up to them to protect people from, you know, information and protect them from, you know, quote unquote propaganda, instead of giving people and equipping people with the mental capabilities of thinking for themselves, right? To not be fooled by this supposed propaganda, whether that's, you know, ISIS or something else that they don't like, right?
Yes, of course. And as you said, okay, they are supposed to inform people, but if they did, or have people think for themselves, but if they did, most of their narrative would collapse. So that's not what they want. But I can tell you, in Germany, I'm not really afraid of them going for this small corridor of opinion, because this is what we had in Germany in the 90s and 2000s. So this was really crazy, the way they narrowed the way of possible thought in Germany. And as I told you before, there was no, not like in the US where you had so many different players before too, where there was a fight. In Germany, it was all very, very much in a narrow corridor. And for example, there was a guy in the SPD, Thilo Sarrazin, who was a very respected guy, who came from an SPD family, who was really respected in the higher ranks of the SPD. Yes, and he wrote a book about migration and the migration problem. He was thrown out so fast. He was labeled Nazi or racist at least, and he was a persona non grata immediately after he put out the book.
Yeah.
So this is what they did with the people, and this was the very narrow corridor we had before. So if I see those people going back there, I know where they are going. I'm not afraid of it, but I know the good taste of what we are having now and what we can fight for. And this is, I think, what a lot of people in Germany are doing, because they are not used to having that much free speech as the Americans had, for example. But it's for them, it's a new taste, so to speak.
Interesting. So how has things changed, would you say, in Germany there over the last year? Really, we've had a number of scattered, I guess, smaller kind of terrorist attacks. There's been a lot of knife, people have been stabbed, basically attacks with knives and things like this. Has that changed the environment at all, would you say? I think the most recent, if I'm remembering correctly, was one attack in Hamburg in late July. Has there been anything more since that you've heard of?
I haven't heard of many in the meanwhile. I think maybe they haven't been talked about it, but I don't think, because our secret services are pretty good in preventing those attacks before, but they're not talking about it. We just have some leaks in between, which are not really that official because they're suppressed and people don't want to lose their jobs, but some leaks where we know that there are so many sleepers, but the secret services are working nonstop basically to stop it, so to speak. And so they're not happening those that many, but what people are seeing, and I think what is waking people up, is that the city, the faces of the city, or the face of the city is changing, so to speak, the face of the country, because you see Muslims everywhere. You see them in your at your dentist. You see them especially in birth clinics. You see them, everywhere you go in larger cities. They're basically, and you can identify them, of course, because of the hijabs. And you see them everywhere. So this is for people that they've had enough because they feel so unsafe. There have been so many small crimes. Everybody somehow knows someone now who has been a victim of a crime, or at least knows all of these stories. They come out every day. If you have seen such a great spike in crime, it's so crazy. And this is, it's not been the punctual attacks in Germany. It's been the crazy rise in crime, the crazy rise in Muslims everywhere,
Yeah.
the crazy claim of power of Muslims and Turks too. They're mostly, or some, many of them are Muslims too, because of Erdogan. They're Erdogan supporters.
Yeah.
And the politicians not reacting to it, but welcoming it and saying, oh yeah, it has to change. It will change. It's great. Yada, yada, yada.
You know, one interesting thing as well is the cost of, I mean, you mentioned, like, well, they managed to stop, terrorism or whatever in certain instances. And of course, I'm not denying that might very well be true. But the amount of resources and money in particular that is spent on doing this is just unbelievable. That many countries are not very open about this. Some are more open than others. It's always the issue, of course, of the authorities not giving the real numbers when it comes to these things. But I saw one comparison the other day, and this was particularly for the UK. But I would suspect it would be, at this stage, very similar in European countries that have a higher, number of migration, open borders, basically, because we don't know who we're letting in, right? So it was basically, the comparison was this: the UK is basically, economically speaking, being hit by a massive hurricane every year and trying to get itself back up on the feet financially after such a destruction. That's how much money is being spent on anti-terrorism. So it's basically like a natural disaster. It's on par with a natural disaster. And I would assume it would be something similar in Germany, probably maybe a little bit less in Sweden, but not far behind, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And this is a massive amount of resources that could be spent, of course, on hospitals, on education, of supposedly taking care of the elderly, right? And all these issues, since they claim that we have an aging population. Well, let's not just waste all of that money there. Let's make the resources last. No, that's not what they're offering here. It's just such a big lie. That's what so angers me about this. It's a massive lie, and they refuse to recognize the truth of the matter, that this is the most costly, wicked, profoundly a historical experiment in all of human history of trying to replace a population in a country like this.
Yes, it's crazy. And it's so transparent right now, because if you suggest some policy as you did, for example, then of course you're a Nazi and you're labeled by those people in power who should be, I think, using their words a little bit more responsibly, so to speak. Yes, you're a Nazi then. So basically, Germany is paying, I think it was 20 billion euros a year just to accommodate those new refugees, not talking about the other migrants who have come before. And we know that a lot of Turks, like Turks, for example, they are a big problem in Germany because they're on welfare have been for a very long time. A lot of them, they're overrepresented very, very much in welfare, in Hartz IV, which is how it's called here. So they're living off of the state. This is costing us a giant sum. The new refugees, so to speak, let's call them that. They're costing the state so much money. And as you said, the costs like security, the costs like the integration fees or the housing fees, this is not even completely calculated.
Exactly.
With that.
Yeah.
And we are criticizing them for, as you said, not caring for the elderly, not caring for the children, not caring for our people, not lowering the. And this is we have a mandatory. Mandatory healthcare insurance in Germany, not lowering the costs for that for the people, but raising it. And of course, it had nothing to do with the refugees, but it just coincidentally happened when they were putting them into the insurance system. So just a coinkydink, I suppose. And if you put those costs all together, it's a giant sum. And they were talking about, oh, we don't have any money. And now suddenly I think they found a pot or maybe a mine of gold somewhere where they're paying all this from.
Yeah, you know, what irritates me as well is that they have this claim, or they have, you know, they claim that they have this humanitarian position and, you know, equality, and there's no difference between human beings, everyone should be treated the same, etc. But, you know, in this attempt, they are completely running over people, the native population in European countries, and completely ignoring them, in some cases having politicians and people in authorities that, you know, are full on out and open about their hostility towards, you know, the native population, and they can almost freely express their hatred of them. They can talk down to them. They can say, you know, in some cases, even they talk about how it's going to be good that they're an aging, dying population, that they're going to vanish and disappear. And very little is done in terms of, you know, truly going after these people for the hatred that they hold in their hearts, you know, for
yes,
us.
Yes.
I think it was a similar, they come out all the time, frankly, to be honest, these politicians and stuff. But I think it was another new case in Germany of someone speaking in these terms, wasn't there?
Yes. It was about a higher up in the Merkel regime. She's not really a minister, but she's the integration officer of Angela Merkel. She's a Turk. Her name is Aydan Özus. And she said there's no significant German culture beside the language. She actually said that. And
it's because she doesn't know it. That's just it, right?
That's maybe the problem.
Yeah.
Yes.
You should have a person maybe who knows German culture, who can appreciate it.
Yes.
Then you can make a comment.
And I think her loyalties are pretty much to Turkey and to Islam,
yeah.
Because she's actually someone who, she's very understanding of child marriages. She said, let's not just generally condone child marriages, but let's be more open, so to speak, because there might be something that they suffer from if they're sent back to their countries and may not be child brides, so to speak. So that's absolutely crazy. And she also said, for example, that Germans should integrate in Germany. And another fact is that her two brothers, they have a thing which is called the Muslim Mark, the Muslim Market translated. And it is an organization which is even in Germany, which is even in Germany controlled or let's say checked or observed by the Verfassungsschutz, which is a secret service who are looking for people that are dangerous. They are Islamists. They are, and she, of course, she claims, yeah, I've had nothing to do with my brothers, but she's supporting Islam left and right. And this is a person which is very close to Angela Merkel and in her cabinet.
Yep, not surprising.
Not
I'm
surprising.
not surprised anymore at all hearing these stories. It's the same all over these European countries almost at this point. Not so much, of course, in the many Eastern European countries, but in Western Europe, I mean, it's the same story all over. Pretty much the same blueprint, if you will, is followed in all these European countries. They have the same agenda. It's different, a different managerial class, if you will. Or different faces of the people doing it, but their heart is equally dark, if you will, in all of them. They're equally hostile to their own. It's very scary, you know. And you mentioned child marriages, and this is one reflection I was doing the other day, thinking about. I was looking at some different TV shows and what they're doing TV about these days, documentary styles and stuff like that. And I came across that there've been a lot of these, TV shows about, Mormon families and couples and things like this, right? Polygamy and husbands that have multiple wives and stuff like that. But I noticed that it was only an issue and a fascination when white people were doing it. It was only an issue kind of from the point of view that they see these people almost like a museum exhibit, right? They can make a whole TV show about some of these people, complete whole seasons where they're following, this big family around and stuff like that. And it's all kind of fascinating to the leftists that have produced the show. But they never recognize that this is an issue which is every family almost within Islam have it like this, and there's never any recognition of this that they have multiple wives, they have tons of kids, but they would never do a TV show like this and portray them in the same kind of foreign way to a certain extent, like they're trying to do with these Mormon families. It's almost this issue that they don't focus on things that make them seem kind of foreign to us, I guess, to a certain extent, right? That their task is to, in their eyes, try to humanize them as much as possible, because the ultimate crime, I think, to them is to have a perception and perceive that people are different, even from a cultural point of view. So they will never recognize and focus on issues which would make us, the general, just normal, regular people in European countries go, oh, that's interesting. I never knew that, or I didn't think about it in that way. They're trying to make them as normal and as human as possible, while trying to make us into these kinds of abnormal, I guess, monsters that are just like, we're the weird ones. And it's the same way as you said before, that it's about having German people acclimatized to the migrants. It's them who are intolerant ultimately, right? It's German people that they're intolerant. They have to adapt to these new circumstances, and if they refuse to do so, they are the racists, right?
Yes. And it's absolutely ridiculous. You're just saying, you were just talking about white people, but I don't think it's just white people. It's also, you were talking about Mormons. It's also about Christianity. Because you're seeing in Europe even that clergymen are going after the church, so to speak. Because I was doing some videos about church people, and you have this in the Catholic Church or in the Evangelical Protestant Church in Germany. There you have a woman who is very welcoming, Margot Käßmann, who is I think it's the equivalent of a bishop in the Protestant Church, and she's openly welcoming refugees like the complete Protestant Church is. And the Catholic Church is even going further. If you look at the Pope, he's kissing the feet of Muslims on Easter. which is crazy. But also, you have in Germany a bishop. He's an archbishop. Bishop Wölki is his name, Archbishop Wölki, and he's openly promoting Islam and refugees so much that I have from like some weeks ago just started calling him Imam Wölki because he's more an imam than he is an archbishop right now, I'd say.
That's crazy, you know. Yeah,
Yes.
are these, I mean, it's almost like that they don't, they either they don't know, truly don't know what they're facing, right? They're so naive that they have no concept of what these that these people that they're opening their arms to and bringing into their countries, for the most part, I recognize it's not going to be 100%, but you know, the vast majority see this as a kind of a religious war. In some cases, they see it as revenge for the Crusades. In some cases, they see it as, you know, that it's their duty and task to attain the land for in the name of Allah and all these kinds of things, right? That they see this as a religious struggle. It's a battle. It's they're to a certain extent on a religious basis, they're at war, while, you know, us and our people are totally naive, and they think that this is some kind of kindergarten game about like
Yes.
making more friends, you know, or something like that.
Yes.
You know, is it ever going
We
to
are
dawn on
the
these people?
world.
Yeah, exactly. Hand singing and kumbaya
Yes.
and
Yes, absolutely. And yes, if you look at this reaction that they're having, it's really, as you say, it's really naive. And fortunately, there are some people in Germany. I was talking to a Laleh Haji Mohammed Madvali, and she, for example, is an immigrant, refugee too, also from the 1980s to Germany from Iran. And her mother in the 1980s was very Western, very open, and she actually saw how it changed Iran when Islam took over. She saw her father turn against her mother, trying to kill her. She was fleeing her father. He was, by the regime, was given some power, was given a weapon and a soldier of Allah, so to speak. And he was now policing people, telling women to wear headscarves, wear hijabs, and so on. And she was seeing the country turning. And for example, she told me gruesome things. And of course, if you have someone from who is from the region, you of course hear stuff you don't even hear on the news. So she was telling me something about a woman that was, I think she, what was it? Was she fighting against the regime? I should think she was protesting against the regime or something. But you can't kill a virgin because then she would, in Islam, she was telling me, because then she would go to paradise. So what they were doing is they were marrying her before for just a couple of hours, raping her so she wouldn't be a virgin, and then stoning her to death. And this story was told to her by the father of the poor woman. So this is what we're facing.
So, yeah, so there's like a kind of a, also on top of it, it's like a medieval level of superstition, right? That's weaved into
Yes.
this, where supposedly people in the West of, you know, common sense and rationality and science and all these kinds of things
Yes.
are bringing in a very outdated mentality and cooperating and working with it as it is a rational partner, right? This idea of, you know, getting along and being together and having diversity and rainbow parties and all this kind of stuff is more important to them than truly try to understand people, understanding their motives, understanding what makes them tick. And this is true, I think, for religions and other groups as well, that they're so naive in front of it. I'm not saying that there aren't people that are, you know, conscious about all of this that's happening and knowing what's going on, but I'm just talking about, you know, the kind of the your base level person that it just is in agreeance with the experiment of multiculturalism and thinks
Yes.
that it's going to work and truly believes that, yes, you know, we can all just, you know, get along and be friends and all this stuff. But I mean, they are, Hagen, you know, in for a truly rude awakening, one way or another.
Yes, and they have been already. So some people, even of the Green Party, which is in some case or in some parts the craziest party of them all in Germany. Even a direct candidate of the Green Party said, "Okay, I'm not feeling safe anymore." So some of them are waking up, who have some common sense left. But as you say, it's going to get worse and worse and worse if we're not stopping it. And the less people are being negatively influenced by that, the slower it goes, but it's accelerating. So on the one hand, we're seeing an increase in terrible, terrible crimes. On the other hand, at least some people or many people are waking up. This is maybe the good part about it. But there's, as you said, they have been, I'd say, naivified maybe, because in school and in society and the media have taught them that we are the world and we're the children and hold hands and kumbaya. This was such a and everything is so fair and nice, and just the people who are against this we are all one. A narrative, just they're the bad guys, and they're the only bad guys in the world, and everything others is such great and so honky donk. And yes.
It truly, just want to say, Hagen, it truly is this kind of, Disney level of
Yes,
morality.
yes.
It's like, and it is the highest level of morality too. That, it's the most important thing that we, that we get along and that we, we should love. But it's at the same time, in terms of nuances of reality, it's a very one-dimensional idea about how the world works and how humans work. And at the same time as they claim that they don't, they become very what's the term? Relative, right, in their position. They're moral relativists, right? We
Yes,
can't really
yes.
believe. No, there isn't such a thing as truly bad or truly good and all these kinds of things. But at the same time, there's a contradiction there, because they see those who are in opposition to the world that they are trying to create, which I believe is a very a very violent and chaotic world.
Yes.
They see those, though, as this almost, Darth Vaderian kind of crowd, right? That they have this like Hollywood stereotypical view on reality of who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. It's, I don't know, it's a kind of a contradiction, I guess, but it's like, on one hand, they are moral, moral relativists, no good and evil exists. At the same time, they view us as these extremely evil people that it's like their duty, almost in this like Star Wars manner, to defeat or something like that, right?
That's true, but I wouldn't say it's a contradiction, because if you, for example, look at the times of Socrates, yes, there were the sophists, the people he was always like trying to fight, or in let's say in the Bible, like the Pharisees, or how's it called in English, which
Yeah,
Jesus
the
was.
Pharisees, yeah.
Yes, Pharisees. Yes, it's the principle is the same basically, and which the principle which we're seeing in these people today too. It's just take arguments, say what other peoples are saying, look for their motives or what they would find to be a valuable point, and then use this to your advantage. Spin it as much as you want, and then use it to your advantage. However you want to do it, you don't have to be as consistent, but just tell them, use some points which don't really connect, or connect them just the way which fits your narrative, and then use it against them.
Yeah.
And I say that not about all of those people. Some of them are actually believing, or many of them are actually believing what they're doing. But I've been reading many times, for example, from Lobachevsky about psychopaths. And if you have psychopaths, they don't really have that. They just have their motive, their final goals, for example, and they're using any means to reach it. And I'd say maybe those people which are generating those narratives are psychopaths or sophists who are just spinning and using the things which we would find acceptable, and don't care just if it's consistent or not.
Yeah. It's
Might be the case.
any means necessary. And I
Yes.
think that they're, it isn't that it's this one, brilliant plan which has been executed from A to Z perfectly.
Yes.
They're just in a position where they attempt everything all the time. That, they throw everything at the problem. And in this case, the problem is, I don't know, ethnic homogenous European societies or something like that, right? And they're throwing everything at it, including the kitchen sink, and they hope that some of these things will stick. And some of them have
Yes.
stuck, so to speak. And some things worked and some things, didn't work. But the point is that they have, they see it as this, it's their objective to make sure that this happens. And I think that they are also, you know, on top of it, they are financially rewarded for their work. There's a lot of people making tremendous amount of money on this. Just this process of, you know, globalization overall in terms of the markets and everything. I mean, this has been a tremendously, you know, beneficial position for those who are advocating, you know, for this globalism, like the banking class, the financial, you know, people and stuff like that. So there's a tremendous amount of money in all of this.
Yes, and also the asylum industry.
Exactly.
I have to say about that, I was really like flabbergasted when I saw that there was an asylum industry on the rise because of the refugee crisis. Because I thought, how could an asylum industry in such a short time develop when this influx just happened so recently? And
Yeah.
then I realized, talking to people over a long time, that this asylum industry has existed for a very long time. It just has been smaller, and now they just scaled up their production, so to speak, to get more people in the country, to get more lawyers, to get those people in front of the courts so they can stay, to get more people in housing, and just get the money out of the system for their benefit.
Isn't it like a scorched earth tactic, right? I mean, they use this. I forget if it was the Russians in their campaign or who it was
The Russians, yes.
that developed this tactic of basically, obviously they pulled back into their own continent, so to speak, with the Arctic Sea against their backs, and you know, Napoleon, and then later you know, the National Socialists tried to, you know, get to them basically, and they couldn't penetrate that deep into the country after long winters and stuff like that. But the argument there, or the point I'm trying to get to there, is that they burned every resource. They torched everything they could so that the advancing armies didn't have anything at their disposal. They didn't have any resources. There was nothing of the land that they could use, right? So yes, in a way, they burned down their own homes and their own farms and stuff like that. But for the bigger picture, this was the objective because they thought that they could defeat the enemy this way. And I mention this because I see a similar thing happening in our countries. When I'm saying the scorched earth tactic, I'm talking about the fact that, you know, economically, we are ruining ourselves. The infrastructure that we have built, the security that we have attained, the law and order, even the sciences, everything that we have built, they are willing to torch, right? And scorch and destroy and burn and ruin for, I don't know, all foreseeable future, at least on the short term, because they believe it's more important to achieve the objective of, you know, replacing us and making sure that our societies will fall, right? So that's what I see happening. That they, what I'm getting at is that in the process, they're willing to destroy their own future and the future of their own children and grandchildren to achieve this objective.
But there might be two groups. I think you're right about one group, and this is the ethno-masochists, how Martin Zellner coins it, like, which means people who hate their own ethnicity and who would rather burn the country down than give it to the supposed Nazis. This is the group you're describing, I think. But there's another group, and this group might be, we might not even know from which country they're from, for example. They might be from other countries or from all countries over the world, because, for example, there are a lot of Saudis owning a lot of houses in Germany, or Chinese people owning houses and areas and even parts of cities in Germany, so to speak. But nobody's really reporting about this. So you don't even know if those people are still living in Germany, or if they're just using the opportunities that are given to them, and they're just so morally reprehensible that they don't care. This is the second group, I think. So there's one, the ethno-masochists who hate their own ethnicity, who are just doing what you were saying. They're scorch the earth rather than have it be used by the evil white people, which they are themselves. But on the other hand, there's a group which are just using this for their own benefit, and which don't have a stake in Germany or our countries.
An international clique. And speaking of which, did you see the Hungary's way that that they were, the ruling party rather in Hungary, was going after George Soros, kind of accusing him of actually using migrants for his plan, not only to, of course, bring in cheap labor across Europe, but to, you know, to destroy it. They're really going after him. I think that's pretty interesting. You know,
yes, I'm really surprised, and I'm also surprised that Benjamin Netanyahu was also accusing George Soros, it's trying to destroy the country and supporting Viktor Orban in Hungary in this fight against George Soros. So we're seeing some pretty surprising alliances alliances here. I'd just say that.
Weird. Yeah, that's weird. Let's return back to and see if there's anything else that you'd like to talk about in terms of the upcoming election, and if there's anything there that our international audience should know about those outside of Germany, those inside too. Of course, we do have many listeners in Germany. But what would you like to? What's an ideal outcome, and what's the worst case scenario outcome in this election? Would you say?
I think the worst case scenario, because I'd say the AfD might not be less than 10%, is 10%. The greatest one that I can imagine is 25% for the AfD, because you can see it that the Trump effect is happening again here in that way that people are not talking about voting for AfD when they are called by telephone polls, because of course then their number is connected to voting AfD, and this might be given to the Antifa, and they show up to your door and ruin your house. This at least might be the fear of many people. So they're not really openly telling who they are voting for, and so they might vote AfD. And then there might be the problem that the election might be faked again, that they might be manipulated. And but against that, we have rallied up a lot of election watchers, so to speak, election watch people. You can do that freely in Germany. Just show up there and say, "I want to watch the election. I want to see the counting of the votes." And also, you can be a voting helper. And those helpers, of course, they see their colleagues and they see they manipulate the election results. So there might be a good chance that that some voting fraud might be prevented, or a lot of voting fraud might be prevented. So it might be a fair election. And if it is a fair election, then the AfD might get 25%. This will stir up the politics in Germany so much, I can't even imagine how this will turn around.
Mm, yeah, I wanted to do, you know, election coverage of the election in Germany, and unfortunately I won't be able to do it this time, mostly due to the hack and the fact that we don't have everything up and running 100% yet in the studio. It will just be too on too short notice. We tried, but we couldn't achieve it. But we have to cover those that we can next time. Of course, this was kind of what do you call it, variables outside of our control, really. But
yes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting nonetheless to follow the election. And of course, I hope that things go well and that there's more people who wake up as a consequence. And regardless, you know, Hagen, I mean, we have to continue to fight on multiple levels. It's a political struggle. It's a culture war. It's an information war. It is I don't know what else, kind of a philosophical war to a certain extent.
Yes.
a war of ideologies and opinions and everything else. So there's multiple fronts, and people don't have to be tied down to staring themselves blind on the political aspect and thinking that that's where everything gets done, because it's not. It's truly, as you said, you brought in the word meta into the discussion. That's really ultimately where things are at. I think politics, you know, is a reflection of a mentality of where people are mentally speaking.
Yes.
So to speak. So if we can, you know, if we can communicate with people, if we can reach people, if we can make them understand what kind of world the globalists are creating and what kind of world that we actually want to have, you know, presented and achieved, I think it would be wise if we could reach these people, because they would make the right decision at that point, and they would see, you know. But it's so much a war of ideology and information, of reaching people, of letting them know you know, what's happening in the world and what our countries are being turned into. And unfortunately, people who don't have access to the right information, they do get to learn it firsthand, in many cases a very rude awakening. And I don't wish that upon everyone, but upon anyone, but it seems that in some cases that's the only way people will change. And even after some of these things happen to it, they still don't change, because the programming is so strong in them, you know. And they refuse to wake up and look at reality for what it is, right? So it's kind of for some people it will be futile, right? But for others, we can win them over.
Yes, and let's not l just look at the people which will join our side. Look at the greater vision, because what I see is that not only in the vision which we can achieve, but also in the way there's great glory to be gained. Because if you look at the vision, for example, we have improved so much regarding technology, and we could have like great countries for ourselves and our children, our grandchildren, and it would be very easy to restructure that, I'd say, if we get the information war, so to speak, if we win that. And on the way to a peaceful country, or countries and Europe, for example, of nations, the Europe of nations again, where we are friends, we're supporting each other's and every nation the way it wants to live. On this track, there is great glory to be have or to be gained for a lot of people, because as you said, there are so many regions. You can go into politics, you can go into media, you can do it on the on as an entrepreneur, for example. If you have products and if you're supporting media, politics, and whatever which is supporting the cause, then you're basically creating the future, and you're creating a great glory for yourself in doing the good work and really doing something which is very difficult at the moment, but which can be such a great reward in the end that it's tremendous. So I think also to the dark side, there's a positive side to it, and this is the glory which we can achieve.
Indeed. Hey, tell us about the new channel that you set up, German Ambassador. Of course, this is in addition to your Hagen Grell YouTube channel, of course. But what's the objective, and what do you hope to achieve with the new channel that you set up? Is this to communicate to the English-speaking world everything that's going on in Germany?
Yeah, this is basically the idea, German Ambassador channel. We have set this up to inform the international public. We'll try to reach a very consistent curriculum very soon. Also, this is also to, because of the name, is also to annoy the establishment, because if you're looking for German ambassador, we'll soon be the number one search results. So if you're looking what the German embassy is doing, you'll find what we are saying.
Good.
So this is also a little jab against the system, so to speak.
Yeah, good. Well, exactly. Good stuff. You know, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, Hagen. Good work. Definitely keep it up. I'll have to have you back again, of course, in the future. Check in again, and ladies and gentlemen, for you guys who tune in, of course, we're not going to do a second segment. We've kind of gone over a little bit the first segment here, but the reasons for that, of course, is because the members' website is currently still down. We're building that right now. If you haven't seen the videos I've done explaining this, please go to our YouTube channel and look at those videos that I've done kind of explaining the situation, of course. But we hope to be up and running here within, I don't know, a week and a half or two or so. And of course, be back to kind of business as usual. But it's been, well, extraordinary circumstances, really. So we appreciate everyone who continued to sustain their membership so that we can actually continue and not dip too much. And of course, if you do want to help us out, make a donation to make sure that we can continue afloat, if you will. That's very much appreciated. We do have more information about, you know, making a donation at redice.tv. So again, the members website, redicemembers.com, will be up and running here soon. And of course, if you're listening to this in the future in the archives, that won't be an issue. But thank you so much for coming on, Hagen. Really appreciate your time today. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with before we round off for today?
No, I'd say we're in for some great surprises, and I want to congratulate you because you were hacked, of course, but I think you're coming back greater and stronger, so to speak. And it's like we're talking about, it's like a badge of honor, because if you angered someone so much that they got a team of hackers to get you to the state where you are, and you're coming back, you're doing something right. So great work to you, and thanks for having me.
You bet. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. We are coming back much stronger, and it's great to touch base with you again, Hagen. Stay in touch, okay? And we'll talk more soon. Good luck in the election, and I hope everything goes well.
Thank you very much. Hear you soon.